Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Witness. Full Service Radio.
There was a turtle by the name of Bert, and the turtle was very alert. When danger threatened him, he never got hurt. He knew just what to do. He'd duck and cover, duck and cover.
He did what we all must learn to do.
You
and you
and you
and you.
Duck and cover.
Welcome to the Sun Cinema Podcast, a weekly radio show that examines the highs and lows of the medium of film through the filtered lens of Washington, D.C.'s only privately owned art house cinema. I'm your host, Jason Cawley, and I'm joined by my co-hosts and the proprietors of Sun Cinema, David Cabrera and Ryan Hunter Mitchell. Gentlemen.
Hey, Jason.
Hi, Jason.
It's a beautiful song.
It's a good song.
David, what was that song that we just...
That's a some it's like a PSA propaganda thing, right? About ducking in cover. For nuclear fallout.
Which seems appropriate.
Which seems appropriate.
Given our guest today.
Given our guest today. We have a very special guest, a friend of a friend of the podcast, lovely Umayam. Lovely is a nuclear non-proliferation policy specialist. She is a research analyst and program at the Stimson Center, where her portfolio covers WMD non-proliferation as well as climate change and its implications on food security. Lovely is also the founder and chief writer of Bombshell Toe, a blog featuring stories about nuclear history, politics, art, and media. The website houses collections of writings concerning nuclear issues as well as a current project focusing on Navajo nuclear histories. Lovely's work under Bombshell Toe is featured at the 2013 South by Southwest Interactive, Fast Company, the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, and the 2013 U.S. Department of State Generation Prague Conference, in which she interviewed Undersecretary of State for Arms, Control, and International Security, Rose Gottmuller. Yeah, got it. From 2013 to 2014, Lovely contributed as a columnist for the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, where she addressed gender inequality in international relations in her piece entitled Women's Work, where she argued that because of women's history forging a human connection with nuclear weapons, they need to be credited for and vocal about issues related to nuclear policy. Welcome, Lovely,
Hello.
To the show.
Hi, new friends. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited.
That's quite a bio.
Yeah.
I know. I just, as you were going through it, I'm like, oh, it's running too long. Yeah, I don't want to be so pretentious. Yeah.
Well, it's like when you watch like politics and prose talks, like they put them all up. Whenever they give like the, when they're about to bring them up, there's like a statement about everyone.
Yeah.
It's like, oh,
so now
this reminded me of that.
Exactly. So now there's high expectations, and I'm going to fail you all. But that's okay.
I think we're going to solve a lot of things today, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. If you set the bar low enough, you can do anything, including solving nuclear non-proliferation.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we're going to talk with Lovely about some of her work, and we're going to discuss nuclear war and film. And
well, just war. See, I'm clear about it.
Yeah.
I think we're going to run the gamut of nuclear weapons to nuclear things, because that's
cool.
Essentially, one of my sort of main missions is to have a better understanding of what nuclear means.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Correct. And then Ryan's going to also talk a little bit about something that he got into this weekend. And
yeah, saw a doc on Friday at Duke Ellington School, so we'll talk about that.
Yeah. Should we recap the last week or weekend real quick? Or
yeah, what did we see? We showed some movies at the cinema.
So yeah, we are at Sun Cinema. It's an actual place where we show movies and such.
We're not just really good conversationalists about nuclear world.
Yeah. So showed a doc called Band Called Death. Very
oh,
cool.
Yeah. Very good.
One of the first metal bands. The theme for this month is black cinema.
That was Crazy Cat. The next day it went.
Crazy Cat was amazing. Our dear friend Tarek Hawk presented a documentary and some shorts, some animated shorts by George Harriman. He gave a really cool talk about it and was like self-deprecating, but was actually so good. Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. We talked a little bit about that last week. Sidney Poitier. That was a fascinating movie because it was both anything from that time period that's discussing something of depth. Mm-hmm. It's always interesting how it's both ahead of its time and also of its time in a way that has faded. Yeah, it was a very nuanced movie. Sorry to Bother You. Has everyone seen Sorry to Bother You?
Yes.
Great, right?
It's good.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Jack?
Did you see it yet?
I still haven't.
Okay.
Well,
I'm sorry. I watched a really arty movie. I watched the 24 Frames film.
The 24 Frames film by...
The
Iranian one?
Yes.
Oh,
by
okay.
Abbas
Kiarostami?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kiarostami, yeah.
That's really cool. I was just looking at something about that yesterday.
It was very cool.
Cool.
Well, not as fun as Sorry to Bother You, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Probably not as fun. But
were you too busy hanging out with Fred Armisen?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Fred Armisen was here.
Yeah,
he was here. Yeah.
He was in your seat, David.
Whoa.
Oh, serious?
I'm never changing these pants.
Hi there, I'm Fred Armisen, and you're listening to Full Service Radio.
Oh,
wow. Well, nice little
proof.
Promo.
I got receipts.
That's a pretty good impersonation you just did there.
Yeah, thanks.
Oh, cool.
Was that you actually, using your Fred voice?
There's a really funny joke he told that didn't make the final edit that I can share here real quick while we're on that subject.
Yeah, let's do it.
Oh,
so
cool.
As you always
do that on our show,
we're gonna cut into your time.
It's an exclusive.
It's film related here.
Oh, good.
Sort of. So you know we're at Full Service Radio, which is a glass box in the lobby of a hotel here, and there was a big like 20 person group of people that walked by the studio, and it got really loud at a certain point. So Fred, as that happens, he does this.
Look, I could do an impression of a crowd.
That's incredible.
That's pretty good.
That's good.
I like that.
Yeah, you know, he should do stuff here. You should have him do a podcast here.
He should do a weekly show, yeah.
We'll train him.
The Last Dragon.
We watched The Last Dragon on Saturday.
Barry Gordy.
Yeah, so it has great tunes the whole time because of Barry Gordy. Yeah. So they didn't
it's
have
a Motown
to,
film, right?
Yeah.
Production.
I loved that movie as a kid. It was on a lot.
It is a strange little movie. And so
it
much
is.
Fun.
It is, but I expected it. And it is campy, but it's very aware of how it's campy.
Oh, sure, sure.
And it ends up being pretty cool the whole time, too. It looks great, and it's more cool than I thought. I thought it would just be laughable. And there's moments, but it's pretty cool. It's fun to watch.
Nice. Not as fun to watch, but very good movie. Sunday, we did a film called Black Girl, which is a Senegalese film about a woman who moves to France to become a servant, which somehow was more harrowing than Roma. And everyone should see it, though. It's a gorgeous film. The music is amazing. I spent a long time trying to figure out who did the music, but couldn't really find anything. But yeah, and then last night was Princesa. Which was a film about a trans prostitute.
Yeah, she's Brazilian. And she moves to
Portugal.
Portugal?
France?
Okay.
Portugal.
Somewhere. Europe. Yep. Europe.
Yeah. Anyways, tonight we're showing the Grace Jones doc from 2017.
All right.
Or 2018, Blood, Light, and Bammy. Putney Swope tomorrow, Robert Downey Sr. Yeah.
Heavily influential film.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one I'm very excited for.
So
enough about us.
Enough about us.
Let's talk to
Lovely.
Let's get nuclear.
Cool.
Should we play that? Can you play the Donald, the He Who Shall Not Be Named clip?
You know what uranium is, right? It's a thing called nuclear weapons and other things. Like lots of things are done with uranium, including some bad things.
Mm. That's interesting.
Deep insight.
Yeah, you don't That's need cool. me. That's all you need to know.
See, I like it when our leaders are also scholars. You know, some people think that it's intimidating to be so intelligent, but I actually like that we could talk about such deep things.
Yeah.
So we're done.
Yeah, that's it.
So Lovely. Tell us a little bit about yourself. We gave a brief intro. What led you toward a focus on nuclear nonproliferation, the dialogue around nuclear weapons and even the word nuclear, and also representation in the field?
Yeah, so to break down sort of what I do day to day, so I'm a nuclear policy analyst. I research nuclear materials and technology because on the one hand, they could be used for peaceful purposes, like scientific research. There's also debate that nuclear energy is of that category. Mm-hmm. But if it falls on the wrong hands, like a country or a terrorist group, it can be used for bad things like nuclear weapons. And so,
as the president said.
Like the president said, really bad things. So I essentially travel a lot. I talk to scientists, other policy experts on how we could secure nuclear materials around the world so they don't end up as nuclear weapons. Mm. And to be honest, I think that most people think that my work is fake. Like, it doesn't really, like, people don't realize that this can be an actual profession, because when they think of nuclear, they think of military people or the United, you know, States president that has the red button, but not really the worker bees that do the research around this topic. And there's actually a lot of us. And I just wanted to note that a lot of us are young and kind of grappling with the fact that, you know, we're not in the Cold War era anymore. We don't necessarily have that same understanding of nuclear threat. So that's a cognitive dissonance that we have to navigate. And I guess I just wanted to also thank you guys for having me here, since film loves to represent nuclear weapons, but mostly as a plot device that will, you know, ruin the world.
Right.
Which is fine, because that's true. It will if nuclear war ever happened. But, you know, I personally sometimes get really bored of that narrative. I roll my eyes when I hear nuclear threat in a movie, just because I feel like it's played out. So this is a really awesome opportunity to bring some nuance into the conversation. So yeah.
Well, we're going to talk about a few films that actually do a pretty good job of handling that as well, right?
Mm-hmm. And ones that don't.
And ones that don't.
So what projects are you currently working on or are most excited about? And
can you tell us about Bomb Shelter?
Yeah, a little bit about that. So aside from my 9-to-5, I created this thing called Bomb Shelter, which is two words mashed together. So it's Bomb Shelter and Shell Toes, like the Adidas clamshell toes. Which is essentially a way for me fusing two different disparate concepts to make something new. And this is essentially an arts and policy collective where I bring nuclear policy experts with artists so we could create some beautiful, compelling, but also rigorously researched art pieces around nuclear. And, you know, I started Bomb Shelter as a way to take tabs on pop culture references that influence our understanding of nuclear. So, for example, I grew up in the Philippines. We don't have nuclear power, but The Simpsons was such a big reference point for me. I loved Blinky the Fish. I thought that that fish was like the cutest thing, but it also influenced, you know, my understanding of what the word nuclear means. So I just wanted to, you know, collect those points of references that meant a lot to me and has sort of formulated my understanding of nuclear. And then now we've sort of grown to creating new pieces to promote different understandings of nuclear. So one of the projects that I'm really excited about is this multimedia project called Ways of Knowing, which is about the Navajo history with uranium mining in the U.S. Southwest. We've partnered with several Navajo community members to do this project. A lot of people don't realize that the U.S. nuclear weapons legacy is not just about the Manhattan Project with scientists in like an underground sort of cave creating weapons, but there is a larger set of characters involved in that, including, you know, some Navajo and Pueblo, you know, miners that helped mine the uranium for the first, you know, U.S. nuclear weapons arsenals. And they had some really horrible experiences. They got sick. Some of them died because at that time we didn't really understand what we were dealing with. Yeah. And so this whole project is helping amplify stories. There's actually a lot of art that's been circulating around the Southwest U.S. around this issue. One of my good friends, Tina Garnanes, She created this documentary film called Yellow Fever in 2013 that chronicles her Navajo family's experience with, the uranium contamination, because her grandparents were actually miners back in the 50s and 60s. And so this is a way to, again, just amplify that story, because a lot of people don't know that nuclear in the U.S. case actually touches the lives of indigenous communities, and they're not gone. They're still around. They're still dealing with uranium contamination. So that's sort of the mission of Bomb Shelter. And just really quickly, the other really exciting project that I'm going to be embarking on with some artists is called Illuminating Radioactivity.
Ooh.
And yeah, trying to figure out what radiation. So radiation is definitely one of those words that elicit, like, you know, strong reaction and opinion. Sure. And then you like ask people, well, what is it? And they're like, oh, I don't know. Is it the sun? You know, like realizing. Yeah, exactly. Like not really having a set, knowing the definition, but already having like a set opinion on it. And we just wanted to kind of deconstruct that, because I think it's really interesting. But
so,
anyway.
So yeah. Wait. So what is it?
What is radiation?
Yes.
So it's like invisible, like this is a very simplified version. So for anyone who's like a physicist or a scientist, listening to this, probably like roll their eyes at
me,
but whatever.
Unlikely, but
yeah. It's essentially like these invisible sort of rays that's actually around us all the time. And there's different kinds. There's ionizing, non-ionizing radiation. Some of our muscle tissue and bones are irradiated. When we fly, we are exposed to a bit more radiation because of the cosmic rays.
Right.
So it's
proximity to the sun.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's a part of our lives, but there are certain types that are really, really, really bad for you,
okay,
which you can, you know, encounter in nuclear explosions, like during, you know, a nuclear attack, or a nuclear accident like
Chernobyl
or Fukushima. And so it's really about defining radiation as actually part of our natural world, but at the same time acknowledging that it can be very harmful if you don't respect the science.
Sure.
And if you don't know what you're doing, if you're being irresponsible with it.
Or so. Forcing people to mine elements that are radioactive.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a thing you have on the Bombshell Toe site on the Ways of Knowing.
Yeah.
Within the Diné community, did I pronounce that right?
Yes.
Okay, within the Diné community, the impact of uranium mining cannot simply be measured by elevated levels of uranium in public water sources or the number of major accidents that have occurred. That's like a little blurb. It seems that you're really trying to get like a story told that is away from just the numbers that are easy to go in an ear and out the other.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, this is where it ties to film.
Sure,
so
that's what I was hoping.
Yeah.
Good job.
So part of Ways of Knowing is actually there's going to be a 360 virtual reality film.
Ooh.
It's a short film. And the idea behind that is we don't necessarily want to throw statistics at people, but rather show the lives of these communities affected by uranium mining. And absolutely, there is a human story to that. But the reason why we decided to do a 360 VR film is because the land is very much a character as well. And it's really difficult to tell the story of the land, especially as a living entity, when you have a 2D sort of representation.
Mm-hmm.
And so the 360 VR, I don't know if any of you have been to the Southwest U.S., particularly New Mexico.
Quite a
Arizona.
Bit, actually, yeah.
Yeah, and it's, isn't it like just when you drive and then you just see land around you and it's really majestic and barren at the same time,
right,
and the way the sun hits it, like it feels more alive than... You know, if you're in D.C., you don't necessarily have that same landscape.
Yeah, I always feel like the desert's underestimated by people who haven't spent time in the desert. It's a magical place, you know, in every respect, from a, you know, at least from the perspective of being out in nature. You know, it's its own entity.
Yeah. And we wanted to bring that kind of experience as close as possible, because, you know, at the end of the day, what is being mined is the land. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how do we tease that out as a concept, right?
Sure.
So, yeah.
Is this underway? Is it, where are you, like pre-production?
Yeah, or? We're in post-production.
Post-production,
right,
okay,
now.
Great.
Yeah, and we are actually going to be screening the first or the final cut of the film in Navajo Nation later in April, May. And so that too, we wanted to make sure that we you know, do this collaboratively with the communities we've worked with.
Right.
That's also like very tenuous, right? Like a lot of people go there, ask for their stories, and then they leave, and then you don't hear from them again until it's on Sundance, right?
Right.
And,
okay. Right.
And we wanted to create a different kind of, I guess, approach where they're part of the creative process every step of the way. So mm-hmm. we thought it appropriate to premiere there first and do some community work before giving it out to the rest of the world.
Great. Yeah.
That's cool.
Thanks.
Very cool.
So, should we segue and play some clips of some nuclear representation in movies?
And we can talk about the pluses or minuses of
this. Should we play a clip from a very famous, and we can discuss which side of, if this is a pro or a con. Jack, can you play the war room scene?
Try BA-8-6543 Moscow.
Yes, sir.
You would never have found him through his office, Mr. President. Our premier is a man of the people, but he is also a man, if you follow my meaning. What did you say?
I said Premier Kissov is a degenerate atheist.
Mr. President, I formally request that you have his ignorant
brutal. I'm sorry,
Mr. President. I think they're trying the number.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room. What is going on here? I demand an explanation.
This clumsy fool tried to plan that ridiculous campaign.
So that's excellent. A clip from Dr. Strangelove, probably one of the more famous movies about nuclear
about
things.
How to stop worrying and learn to love the bomb.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, that actually...
Ironically.
Yeah, that movie... this is going to sound sacrilegious, but I have a love-hate relationship with that movie.
Sure.
Just, it's amazing as a film.
Yeah.
But I just... And, you know, it's dark comedy, and I think it just perfectly captures why we're in the situation we are now in, and it's depressing for me as a nuclear policy expert, and so I can't... It's like one of those movies that I can watch over and over again because I'm like, yeah, this is a great nuclear film. It's just a little too like sad for me. And
yeah, I got to think it like it. I've watched it about a year ago, and it, because of the fact that it's a satire and some of the characters, the way that Kubrick developed some of these characters and Terry Southern, the other writer on the film, like. These guys feel like it could be 2018 sitting there having the same conversation in the Pentagon again. You know, it doesn't really age. And maybe that's part of the frustration is that 1964, 2018, you could still have pretty much the same debate with the same characters coming into play.
Is it too cynical?
I think so. But it's really funny, though.
Sure.
I just have, I think the best way to describe it is a love-hate relationship with it. Like I really love,
like a strange love hate.
Yes, there you go.
Where's
yeah.
the zing?
Ding.
There we go. Yeah, and obviously like the doomsday machine that the Soviets have.
Sure.
I really love the part where Dr. Strangelove is like, well, you know, it'll only work if you tell everyone what this is.
Right.
And that's actually like a perfect description of deterrence, right? If you want to prevent, you know, deter someone, you have to
have your own.
Yeah, tell them, like tell the world that you have this and hence you shouldn't do what you want to do to me because I have this thing and I can retaliate and I could actually harm you even greatly, right? And So I think that that's like a really fun scene that encapsulates deterrence, which we as a world still abides by today.
Sure.
Right. So, yeah.
Well, does it become like an easy, because it seems so abstract, because the idea of a nuclear weapon is so powerful. I mean, I feel like it becomes like a classic MacGuffin in a movie. It's just like something that you can use as like this ultimate end all, a huge existential threat. So it's just easy to like focus around that, like, oh, how do power dynamics work? How do human interests work around this dynamic of like, right, everything could end?
Yeah, I actually love that word, or the way that you described it, as easy. And I think that's the reason why, as a nuclear policy expert, you know, sometimes I don't want to watch movies with nuclear weapons in it, because it typically is lazy narrative.
Totally. Where
it's just like, oh, here's that thing that will kill everyone. And it's either, you know, it's like, and it's just, as someone who's been doing this for 7 years, it's so much more than that.
Yeah, like, of course.
And so it's, yeah, I totally agree with it.
You're like, no, it's actually a real thing that we interact with all the time. Yeah. And we need to understand this.
And it's actually really scary.
Yeah.
And like, you know, people make mistakes all the time in these facilities. And, you know, like,
I've seen The Simpsons.
Yeah. And so it's like, God, yes, you're right. It is scary, but it flattens the issue, yeah, right, I think.
Well, you mentioned a couple of films that you actually really like that kind of have this as subject matter. In one way or another.
Maybe more nuanced.
Yeah. So, you know, the films that I like diverge from the conventional nuclear narrative. They're a little bit quirky. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean I agree with the themes and the message, but I think it's just a different, again, dimension to nuclear, and that's why I think that they're worth seeing.
Right.
So the first, should I just go dive right into it?
No, let's talk about it.
The first one is Our Friend the Atom, which is a Walt Disney movie. A lot of people don't realize that Walt Disney was really into nuclear. Tomorrowland was all about nuclear-powered city, right?
Cool.
And this movie, and it was accompanied by an actual like book, like an art book. This is definitely propaganda. They were paid by the U.S. government as well as General Dynamics at that time.
Who was one of the largest contract holders for the U.S. government when it came to forward looking on the nuclear cities of the world kind of thing.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And I like it because it traces, it's a really interesting way of tracing the story of the atom from like the ancient Greek times when they're like, what are we made of? Mm-hmm. Right. To the scientific discoveries of Maria Pierre Curie, there's Einstein. And it's like, how did we end up recognizing the atom and then splitting it and then realizing it could be bad and good at the same time? And so the film actually starts off with this parable of like a fisherman finding like a genie lamp, right? Which is supposed to be a symbol for nuclear power in general. And it's like, you have three wishes. And what wishes do humanity want from nuclear? Is it, you know, peace? Is it science? And so it crafted a very interesting way of talking about nuclear while recognizing it recognizes the duality of the atom.
Okay.
So it's really interesting. Yeah. So
it's like 1957. That. Like it was kind of ahead of the curve in that conversation, I guess, in a bigger sense, right?
Yeah. And of course, the animations are beautiful.
Yeah,
it has that very, you know, the Disney aesthetic that I love. And so it's also just a beautiful film to watch.
Perfect.
Yeah. Should I go to the next?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
The other one is called, it's Russian. It's called...
Boo.
Can you play that Trump clip again?
So it's called Atomic Ivan. It's like a weird indie movie about two nuclear physicists that are in love. And they just... The whole film is them hashing out their love for each other in nuclear power plants. Like
that's the backdrop of the story.
Yeah.
That Okay.
They go to different parts of the facility, and it's more like I loved it because of the imagery and the cinematography more so than the plot. It's just a really interesting way of thinking about nuclear, not in the sense of a bomb, but an actual place where people work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this is also, you know, a great entry point to thinking about nuclear sites, not just as a point of accidents, which we've seen everywhere and is true and is horrible, but there are communities out there who depend on nuclear facilities for work, right? And they actually see it as part of the community. That's also true. Uh-huh. And so, like, that's, again, that's, there's a duality there that I really like. It's a little bit more complicated than, oh, nuclear facilities, bad, horrible accidents, but it can have humanity in there. And I also thought that this movie, interestingly enough, was sponsored by Russia's nuclear industry. So there's definitely a messaging there.
Right, right.
It's like the Disney.
Yeah, exactly. But again, it's just, it's interesting to balance, you know, all the nuclear weapons movies that Hollywood likes to show. Mm-hmm. It's just a little bit more nuanced than that. And I think I actually wanted to add the Japanese Godzilla, the 1954 Ooh. Godzilla, right. into my list. It's awesome. Great. Everyone should watch the Japanese version,
mm-hmm.
none of the American
We haven't been able to do that yet.
Yeah. Just really quickly, you know, the Japanese version is actually inspired by an accident that happened, I guess it's 1954, mm-hmm. Because the U.S. tested the first hydrogen bomb in 1954 near the Pacific, in the Marshall Islands. And the fallout was so huge, and it actually, the scientists miscalculated the plume, right. So it went a completely different direction, and it contaminated a Japanese fishing boat. It's like Lucky Dragon 5 is the name of the fishing boat, and I believe one person didn't survive, like eventually died because of health issues from the fallout, and that is actually the catalyst to the Godzilla storyline, because right. Godzilla is this from my understanding, or as I recall it, Godzilla was this sleeping lizard sea creature.
Oh, yeah, and then the bombs.
Yeah, and so, again, it's like one of those things where, you know, it was minding its own business, and then because we decided to test, it emerged and ended up, you know, pillaging Japan, right?
Kind of becomes this really cool metaphor. For
yes, and the American movies obviously stripped.
Oh, sure.
That part
no.
of the narrative.
Impossible.
So, yeah, I love that movie. Again, and that's a nuclear weapons related movie, right? But there's nuance there. It talks about testing. It talks about, you know, the sleeping creature and, like, responsibility, as opposed to, again, using nuclear weapons as this plot device mm-hmm. that, you know, villains use and then the bad guys thwart, you know, like... Yeah. It's a little bit richer in terms of narrative.
At least it actually is reacting to the concepts of, like, a nuclear world.
Yeah.
It's not just pointless.
Yeah.
You said you were excited about a doc coming out on HBO.
Oh, yeah. Chernobyl.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's in partnership with BBC or, like, the Brits in general. And cool. I love anything that comes out of that side of the world.
Sure. They're
very
Downton
well
Abbey.
Down. Yeah.
The office.
Downton Abbey is amazing.
And so, you know, it's about the nuclear accident that happened in 1986 in Ukraine. A lot of people don't... I mean, I think most people know what Chernobyl is, right? When you,
sure.
But not necessarily, like, what actually happened,
how
like what went wrong, and
right the details aren't carried on with the average person.
Exactly. And so I think this, I'm really excited about this because it's a multi-part series that just talks about, like, what went wrong, who were the heroes. You know, I think there were scientists who tried to stop what was happening, and you know, and also kind of spells out the consequence, because there's definitely parts of Chernobyl that you cannot, like, you should not go to,
right? Right.
Because it's still highly radioactive. And so, yeah, I'm really excited about that. When is it coming out again?
It's May this year.
Okay.
So a couple months.
Oh. Yeah. So hopefully that would revive conversations about responsibility when it comes to nuclear issues. Yeah. So, yeah.
I think we were talking, Ryan and I were looking at a couple of things that we remembered. I think you brought up Silkwood.
Yeah, I love Silkwood. It's been a minute, but yeah, that's Meryl Streep. She's pretty decent at acting. but yeah, she plays, she's trying to blow a whistle on like a plant she's working at,
right,
and how she's been exposed to radiation. And it's based on a true story of Karen Silkwood, who, while she was about to testify to like a nuclear committee, and while she was organizing as like an organizing activist for her workplace, died in a car accident that seemed pretty
mysterious.
You know,
at
yeah,
best,
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's an outstanding film. Mike Nichols directed it in 1983.
Cher's right.
I think that's her first actual like serious film role. Yeah,
yeah, she's good in that. Kurt Russell, Nora Ephron is one of the main screenwriter.
Uh huh.
And
yeah, I think the other one I would recommend for people, if you haven't seen it, just to get a taste of that world and see it in something that's well done and accessible, is 1979's China Syndrome with Jane Fonda, Jack Lemmon, and Michael Douglas. And it's basically just centers around a cover-up of a safety hazard at one of these facilities in California. And the only reason I think it kind of breaks the mold, other than, you know, because it is obviously like Jane Fonda's a reporter, television reporter, and she's going after the story. But they do such a good job of kind of walking you through what a power plant is and what a power plant, you know, in the right hands and done responsibly, you know, or managed responsibly, could potentially, you know, bring to a state like California.
Mm-hmm.
And then how easily something like that can go sideways, and are the people who are in charge of that really prepared to deal with the safety hazards that come with dealing with a nuclear power plant? But fantastic performances all around, and just really, you know, good film.
Lovely. Have you seen Hiroshima Mon Amour?
Oh, there you go.
No, I have not. Oh. What is that?
It's an interesting movie. It's a French New Wave movie about like a post-war Japanese. It's in Japan, a post-war love affair, and they're sort of rehashing flashbacks of like love and suffering, and I would say that it is a very human film about nuclear, but it's also pretty predominantly about like the negative effects of nuclear war. So I would be curious as to where that would
post the positive effects.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean yeah.
Well, it was an interesting film. Like, aside from the kind of nuclear aspect, obviously, I mean, it was a 1959, and it's like one of the first films that really show like a European French, I guess, filmmaker or something. But anyway, a French character, female French character, and a Japanese male character coming together in like their love story.
Interesting.
Which was kind of, you know, ahead of the curve anyway. But yeah, fantastic movie.
Well, okay. And since no one's bringing it up, how do you feel about The Simpsons? What about their take on the nuclear power plant? Because it does show it from like the workers' perspective and from the community perspective, and like the dynamics of the town revolving around this power plant.
Yeah, I personally love The Simpsons.
Okay.
I think it's an amazing
piece. So it's 100% correct.
That's another
Science
matter.
Has said it, yeah.
But it's funny, you know, to see Homer Simpson, you know, like shirking work and like just sleeping on the job, and I mean obviously that like influences our understanding of what the nuclear workplace looks like. And I mean, granted, there have been like really crappy incidents that have happened because of, you know, like the lack of what we call security culture, like in nuclear facilities. There's definitely some like shady things that go on, but I wouldn't necessarily say that that's like across the board. So yeah, I love The Simpsons. And I've already mentioned Blinky. Blinky's one of my favorite characters.
Got a little clip here of that, actually.
Oh, really?
All right, read the light.
Wait a minute. 1, 2, 3.
I guess you can't see the visual here.
He's got three eyes.
Yep. Burns denies responsibility in fish flap. Yeah, that was the newspaper headline.
You know, the nuclear industry hates it, right?
Oh, I
like,
of course.
They're just like, that is not how we work. You know, and I would argue that over time, you know, I think we strive to be more safe and secure with nuclear technologies. But I love The Simpsons because I think it also holds, you know, society accountable, right? To be like, hey, this could happen if we don't ask questions or, you know, it plants a seed in your mind. Like, are they like that? You know, which we could debate whether it's a good or bad thing. But I believe that there should be accountability when it comes to the way that we handle nuclear materials and run nuclear facilities. And I think The Simpsons has played like a really interesting role in that debate.
Well, if nothing else, I mean, you've got 20 plus years of people who've kind of grown up on The Simpsons who are at least aware of nuclear, you know, processing nuclear power plant, even if it's just as a backdrop to The Simpsons, they've at least got some connectivity to what this is.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully they have more, but
yeah. Well, I'm sure it's like demeaning to the actual technicians who deal with this, who are probably held to a very high standard and incredibly smart. They're not the Homer Simpsons. However, there's this certain metaphor of like, man, step back. Man is a Homer Simpson, and we are messing with this huge, of course, not the technicians who are actually in his role. But I think the metaphor there is like, hey, us as people who can be Donald Trump and have a huge say over how the world works are dealing with these huge life-ending
concepts. The repercussions of not handling this well ends poorly for everyone.
Yeah, you just reminded me. So one of the other things that I am, reading right now is the book *Sapiens*. Do you guys have you guys heard of that? Like,
no.
What's her name? His name Yuval Harari, I think. So it's basically the short history of man of humankind, like human species. And particularly Homo sapiens, and you reminded me of that because at the end of the day, we're just sort of these animals that have evolved and have become the top of the food chain, like highly sophisticated. Sure. But we continue to mess with things that we don't understand, you know. And there's actually there's a clip. He did this talk a couple of years back. And he said something to the effect that humans are like sheep with nuclear weapons, you know, and that like that's he further goes to say that, you know, if we were wolves with nuclear weapons, that's actually better because at the very least we have an intention, you know, but sheep were just kind of like, you know, putzing around, you know, not really knowing what we're doing. And so he actually thinks that sheep with nuclear weapons is more dangerous than wolves with nuclear weapons. But anyway, that went a very sad path, but sorry.
What we're about.
Yeah.
The weather outside is beautiful today in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about the thing? Or?
Yeah, you know, I saw a doc about a song. If we ever need to kill time, we'll talk about it. But this was fun to go nuclear.
I'm curious, like, how did you get to this point? Like, what were you just interested in? Did it start with like a deep interest in all things nuclear? Did it start with an interest in lack of representation or different narratives not happening?
Yeah, you know, I don't, like, it's funny because a lot of people ask me that, like, how, like, how...
That's such a niche, yeah.
Yeah, and to be honest, like, I stumbled into it. Like, it wasn't like I was 7 years old. It was like, you know what I want to do, Mom? Yeah. Like, I want to save the world from nuclear weapons. Like, I didn't know, like, that this can be done. And if I had to choose, like, one moment... in time, it was during undergrad. I went to Reed College, which is a liberal arts school in Portland, Oregon. Yeah. I had a professor there who did a nuclear policy class, but instead of doing like the deep dive into deterrence, and like he actually went through different countries that tried to pursue nuclear weapons. Oh. And there were some that actually rolled back, like they were in pursuit and then they decided not to pursue. You know, there's like Argentina and Brazil is actually like a case of that, right? And, you know, and a lot of people don't know it. And I actually appreciate that entry point to nuclear because it goes to show that nuclear the nuclear narrative can mean very differently in different countries. There's different intentions and decisions as to why. And I was more compelled by that, which is more of like an anthropological kind of point of view. And, you know, from there, it's almost like peeling, you know, like the onion layer. Like I started with that and then like delved deeper and realized that there is so many different kinds of nuclear stories. Like, for example, Africa, right? Like people don't think... Africa as like a nuclear continent because of the different assumptions that we make about countries in Africa not being developed. But, you know, that's actually wrong because, you know, there are many countries in Africa that are highly nuclear in that they have the richest uranium deposits in the world. Like Congo has... actually, the I believe that uranium in Congo was used for one of the weapons that we used on Japan. Hmm. So
they're partway to blame.
No, I wouldn't. They were exploited.
Yes,
I think better way to
long history.
Yeah, and you know that too. Like if you look at where nuclear weapon states have tested, right? A lot of people. You know, again, things that we don't think about, like, huh, where did we test, you know, nuclear weapons? Because you need a lot of land to do it. And here in the United States, we tested in the Pacific. So that's like Marshall Islands area. We tested in Nevada, yeah. Which is near indigenous communities. The French, for example, a lot of people don't know that they tested in the Saharan Desert and French Polynesia. And so those are stories that I am more attracted to as opposed to, like, let's talk about the calculation of deterrence and strategic stability. Like, I know that that's important work and other people are doing that. I'm more in the business of showing how multifaceted nuclear stories can be, and they have a wider cast of characters. Going back to your, David, your point about representation, right? You know, nuclear can be about brown and black stories because a lot of former territories and colonies were used as testing sites by nuclear weapon states. So that becomes a story about exploitation and colonialism. There's also just thinking about who has nuclear weapons. There's only like 9 countries now that do, and then the rest of the world doesn't. So that's a story about control, right? Yeah. And so I was pulled into this line of work because of that. I hope that through sort of my work with Bombshell Toe and, you know, opportunities to talk about it like this podcast, that people start appreciating that too.
Right on. Very encompassing.
Well, this is going to help. I think this podcast is...
Yeah.
It's all good.
Our listeners are...
Win the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah.
We've applied. We sent them our resumes.
Haven't heard back.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We sent them a bottle of Malort and our headshots in front of the Line Hotel.
Oh, yeah. The headshots will do it. Don't worry. Just wait.
Yeah. It's our Malort face, actually. It's just our Malort face Polaroids.
Yeah.
Malort is a terrible liqueur, by the way.
It's basically radiation.
Oh, I don't know if we have... I'd be really curious if you have movies that have nuclear references to it that you hated.
Hmm. Well, there's that's a pretty long list, but yeah.
Probably. I'm pulling up.
Yeah, I mean, I love hate a lot of... like Broken Arrow, I love hate.
Oh, there you go.
That's with John Travolta and Christian Slater. Awful. Of course, it's always... someone steals a weapon off of a train. One goes off, I think, in it, right? I think...
does it?
Yeah, I'm trying to... anyways.
My... as you guys think about your...
Batman.
Batman's...
Yeah. Dark Knight,
like,
right?
Some of All Fears. That kind of thing.
Have you guys seen the X-Men First Class?
The one where
the mutants started, like, the Cuban Missile Crisis.
That's right. Exactly.
And I think what, like, irked me... the most about that is Cuba is represented as like a deserted island.
There's no Cubans in it at all. Yeah. It's just a deserted beach to fight.
I know. And then like Magneto like diffuses all of the nuclear mm-hmm. weapons. And I'm just like, oh God. Okay. I guess. I love X-Men. So I will forgive
the franchise
for that, but that just like really hurt.
Well, that's the MacGuffin, I think. Yeah. That's like the simplified use of just an existential threat.
You probably don't love.
Yes.
Right. It's all those movies. The Sum of All Fears, The Peacemaker with Clooney and Nicole Kidman had that. I mean, like, yeah, Crimson Tide, The Hunt for Red October. You know, there's so many versions of that, like the K-19 Widowmaker, Harrison Ford awful.
I don't know that one.
Oh, it's so bad. All of those films are basically just that. It's using nuclear, you know, a nuclear potential attack or a weapon getting into the wrong hands kind of thing as a jumping off point.
Almost that too.
Terminator 2's got reference to that. There's a bunch. I'm actually looking through. You know, just a laundry list of.
I found a movie that I don't know if I hate, but it's called Invasion USA from 1952, and it has a 2.8 rating on IMDb. And
sick.
It's about a group of people at a bar witness the unfolding events of a Soviet invasion of the USA.
Cool.
I might
see.
torn.
Yeah, I'm kind of for that.
Yeah.
Should we listen to some really good discourse about nuclear arms by Sun Ra?
Yeah.
Friend of the pod.
Yeah, friend of the podcast. Play us out. Lovely, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. It's been fun.
We'll link Bob Shelto and some other things.
Yeah.
Cool.
Thank you.
All right.
And we could really use that song. Right.
Yeah, there we go. That has all a right. slow fade in.
Yeah, it does.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.
It's a motherfucker, don't you know? If they push that button, your ass gotta go. It's a motherfucker, don't you know? If they push that